In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to hour number two of the program for Friday, April 16th, 2010, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I have said and will continue to say that the Friday hour, the second hour of the Friday show, is probably my favorite of the week because it is time for the Federal News Countdown. And this week in particular, happy to welcome two veterans of the Federal News Countdown to the program. Both have been on before and both have chosen three terrific stories for us to count down this week. You heard at the end of last hour that Jonathan Brule, the executive director of the IBM Center for the Business of Government, is in studio with me. And Jonathan, welcome again. It's great to have you.
Thanks.
And at some point, maybe we'll have a chance to chat some more about that panel. It was a terrific panel, a lot covered, very, very meaty there. So hopefully we'll have a chance to get into that later on in the program. Also, in the chair for me this week on the countdown is Deborah Roth, partner of Shaw, Bransford & Roth, and one of the co-hosts of Fed Talk every Friday morning at 11 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome, Debbie. It's nice to have you back
Thank
as well.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to do it. There are a lot of stories for us to cover, so I'll dispense with the chatter, and we will get on with the countdown. Number three story as chosen by Jonathan Brule this week is from Federal News Radio's Max Kakis. And the headline is Platts bids for Comptroller General job. David Walker has been out as Comptroller at the Government Accountability Office for how long now? Is it over two years. It was over 2 years. I was going to say definitely over a year and approaching two, but it's been longer than that. I don't think anybody has suggested that Gene Dodaro is doing anything but a fine job leading the Government Accountability Office. And in fact, he's a candidate for this position. But this story has to do with a congressman that I happen to know a fair amount about, Congressman Todd Platts from Pennsylvania's 19th District. That's York and a part of Adams County in Pennsylvania. And I know a little bit about him because he was my congressman for a while and still is my parents' congressman. He's an interesting person, I think, to be a candidate for this job, and there is actually a little bit of discomfort back in his district about the fact that he wants it, to be honest with you. Why did you think this was a significant story, Jonathan?
Well, I picked it for a number of reasons. The first is just the Platts angle. It's rather interesting. You've got a member of Congress seeking this position, one who's had a lot of role in oversight and use of GAO work. But he's also a Republican, and seeking the nomination by a Democratic president is an interesting angle.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought on those grounds alone, it was probably worth some attention. But frankly, I view this as a proxy for the larger issue.
Which is?
David Walker's been gone for over 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
The GAO is one of the most important organizations in the government. It's tied at the hip with OMB. They were both created in 1921, along with a very committee that Platt served on, the Government Reform Committee, and over in the Senate, the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. So those government-wide committees and OMB and GAO are statutorily have a long history and actually work well together when they've got leadership that's in place. I think GAO long-term is going to suffer without a confirmed CG in place.
This is a little different, though, than some of the agencies that are operating like TSA with acting administrators because the process is different. This is not something that people can point fingers at the White House about as people have about
not
some of
all.
The other
this
openings.
This is a unique process that was formed several times ago when in looking at the Comptroller General, the Congress decided it needed a process. There's a commission of the eight most senior members of the ranking minority parties that put together a list. They send a non-binding list down to the White House, and at that point, the president's in a position to forward a nomination.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, not even from that list, if he cares to choose somebody
Yeah,
else.
He can choose anybody he wants.
This process has been languishing now for a long period of time, and to the disappointment of several of us who have been following it and writing articles in Roll Call magazine, it followed the path of being an application process
mm-hmm.
as opposed to a search. And normally when you're talking about a very senior, important, and unique role, you go out and actually search for the strongest candidates. this was put on its head a little bit, and they put up notices and took in applications from a lot of people.
There was a link on the Oversight Committee's website where anybody in the United States could apply for this job.
You, too, could have applied for the...
How do you know I didn't?
You may well have,
yeah.
But you didn't make the final cut.
No, I obviously didn't.
But again, not only is this languishing, but it's gotten caught up in the partisan politics.
So well,
the Democrats put forward four names.
Mm-hmm.
Then several days later, the... Republican leadership set up their own list, minus one with an additional name of their own. And so, again, we've got a partisan squabble in the midst of what is, frankly, the selection of a very important position.
It doesn't strike me that his shot is particularly good. There's no political benefit where, like there was, say, with John McHugh when he went to become Secretary of the Army, where you had the possibility that a Democrat could take that seat. This is one of the safest Republican seats in the United States. Speculation has been in my hometown that my dog, who's no longer with us, could win this seat if he could get the Republican nomination. So there's no benefit there to the White House to choose Congressman Platt. So it's a fascinating story because I don't know that I see any benefit. And yet it seems to me that just the nature that he's willing to go on the record and do an interview like this, like he did with Max, indicates that he really seems to want the job pretty badly.
Well, I think he knows a lot about it. You know, this is a position that has a 15-year term. This is almost like picking a pope or a Supreme Court justice.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be around quite a bit longer than this administration and the next.
Yeah.
And they're going to have a huge role in supporting the management agenda of people like Jeff Zients. And they're going to have a huge role at some point being asked by the Congress to assess the effectiveness and results of it. So, again, this position shouldn't be underestimated, and the importance is significant.
The headline is Platt's Bids for Comptroller General Job. You find that at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Later this afternoon, Debbie Roth, your story number three is from the New York Times. It's headline, Former NSA Officials Charged in Leaks Case. This is a big deal. We're going to talk about this more next week on this program because of the implications that are here. But give us the legal synopsis of what's going on here and then tell us why you think this is really important.
Yeah, sure. The legal synopsis is it's a former official of NSA, according to the New York Times. Thomas Drake, who is the person who was indicted, was a high-level official over at NSA, the National Security Agency, out in Fort Meade, Maryland, which is the United States government spy machine, electronic spy. And many of your listeners will remember they were the ones who were doing the eavesdropping program that came under enormous controversy in the Bush administration because it turned out they were actually listening to American citizens without a warrant.
Mm-hmm.
He apparently was giving classified information to a Baltimore Sun reporter. Somehow he gets nabbed in it. The information he was turning over were about NSA electronic programs and a boondoggle associated with it. I haven't read the indictment itself, but it wasn't actually about what they're collecting, who they're collecting it from, what kinds of codes they've broken, things that go to the heart of national security. It was about sort of the technical flaws in the program,
mm-hmm.
and cost overruns, things that most American citizens think, how's that classified?
Yeah.
Why is that classified? Shouldn't we know? It's our money. Shouldn't we know if a boondoggle was afoot?
Mm-hmm.
And he was prosecuted. They began the prosecution, or at least the investigation, in the Bush administration. The other big news story associated with this is that the Obama administration, different party, sort of a different view of the whole NSA program,
mm-hmm.
Decided to continue the prosecution and indicted the guy.
So it would have been not out of the realm of normalcy if the Obama administration would have just said, we have a different view, we're not going to continue this, we're just going to drop it.
That's right.
And they chose not to.
That's right.
Okay.
So that's news. I think that's sort of news story number one as a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
News story number one is the Obama administration is pursuing these kinds of cases. News story number two is to the American public, which sort of brings out that tension in our democracy between freedom of the press, which is a constitutional benchmark of our country,
mm-hmm.
open government, which Obama ran on, and the concern for national security. And there's this tension, and
mm-hmm.
this case really sort of exemplifies that tension, because for most people, they think the information that he passed to the Baltimore Sun reporter goes to more about the efficiency of our government and not the security of our government.
I thought that this was interesting, and it made me wonder what the effect might be on potential whistleblowers, because I don't see the difference between this and a whistleblower other than the information went to a newspaper reporter rather than my boss or the somebody at the top of the agency or the agency IG.
Right. Well, the Times reports it as whistleblowing, and I think for most people who read, who are into this kind of stuff, you view it as whistleblowing because they're whistleblowing on an inefficiency in a government program. They're not whistleblowing on what we learned, mm-hmm. who we're spying on, and how we're doing it.
Right.
So people clearly view this as whistleblowing made illegal, for which he's going to jail. And of course, I'm sure the government will respond and say, well, look, he had viable places to go blow the whistle when it involves classified information. He could have gone to the inspector general, could have gone to Congress, could have gone to the White House. I mean, there are places inside the government where theoretically they take secure information. But that doesn't account for that other tension I was talking about in a democracy, which is an open and free press.
Yeah.
How would American citizens know about the gazillion millions of dollars probably that were at issue here, which is our money,
mm-hmm.
If that information doesn't come out? And that tension there is really forefront in this case.
We're going to dig into this story, as I said, more next week on In Depth on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. But Debbie Roth, story number three this week is former NSA official is charged in leaks case. It's a New York Times story, and you can find it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And we will continue our countdown of the top three news stories of the week with Jonathan Bruhl of the IBM Center for the Business of Government and Deborah Roth from Shaw, Bransford and Roth in just a moment.
Become a citizen of Natchtown and make your dollar go further at Nationals Park. Get your writ on. Watch future Hall of Famer Pudge Rodriguez, All-Star Ryan Zimmerman, Slugger Adam Dunn, and the Nats as they battle the Rockies Monday, April 19th to Thursday, the 22nd. T-shirt Tuesdays are back. Be one of the first 10,000 fans and you'll get a free Nats T-shirt presented by Tickets.com. Thursday, Miller Lite Party Night. Spend less, get more, go Nats. Visit Nationals.com or call 888-632-NATS.
How is the Federal Bureau of Investigation using financial data to inform its management decisions? What about FBI's efforts to migrate to a unified financial management system? And what are the key procurement challenges facing FBI? Listen next week as these questions and more will be explored with guest Richard Haley, Assistant Director of the Finance Division and Chief Financial Officer, Federal Bureau of Investigation. Join host Michael Keegan next week on the Business of Government Hour. That's next week on the Business of Government Hour.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Eric.
The Israeli government says Apple cannot import its new product, the iPad. The government is concerned that that powerful tool consumes too much capacity on wireless networks, and it could disrupt other devices. Not only can you not buy one there, but tourists cannot bring iPads into the country until officials certify that they comply with local transmitter standards. There are some serious national security concerns the government's not making public. I'm J.J. Green.
When you hear the word counterfeit, you automatically think of money. Well, it's much broader than that. Everything you buy has the potential of being counterfeit, especially those items that are hard to find and run the risk of becoming obsolete. And that's where Airing comes in. They're helping customers plan ahead for parts obsolescence so that when a part is needed, no matter how small, it's the real deal. When lives are at stake and relying on the integrity of systems is critical, there's no time to question authenticity. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for this afternoon's Daily Debrief. Challenging times for the Postal Service as the business model has just changed and quickly. Are there fixes? The Government Accountability Office has been looking into that question, and we'll talk to them this afternoon. And you've been working on the Open Government Data Initiative? We'll talk to a professor who specializes in open data. Really? All that and much more this afternoon, 3 to 7 on the Daily Debrief with Chris Dorabeck and Amy Morris, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, is the home of the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Jane Norris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10, Tom and Jane navigate the world of the RFIs, RFPs, circulars, executive orders, and regulations for you, the federal manager and contractor, and deliver news, perspective, and analysis in plain language to make your agency and company more efficient. Tom and Jane speak to newsmakers and analysts live to get to the details on the latest mission-critical news and information. The Federal Drive is federal news from the inside up. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Jane Norris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Your source for federal news now.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. We are counting down the top three federal news stories of the week as chosen by our expert panel this week, which is Jonathan Bruhl of the IBM Center for the Business of Government and Deborah Roth, partner of the law firm Shaw, Bransford & Roth. And it's time for
number two.
The headline is Gates adopts 26 Fort Hood panel recommendations. This from the American Forces Press Service, part of the DOD. And Deborah, it is your story number two this week. What's the story here?
You know, the story, of course, it gets released by DOD. You know, nothing could be our best. We were all talking about bureaucratic institutions during the break, but nothing is better at being bureaucratic than the Department of Defense. It thrives on being bureaucratic. So all these data points and pieces of information about the independent panel's findings about what went wrong at Fort Hood, they're all there in my story. To me, the story is that everything failed, that there was really almost nothing in place to ensure that the military could identify before a tragedy occurred that one of its soldiers was going to, you know, go into extremism and commit something akin to an act of terror.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that from the fact that the report from the panel has not been released. That happens in June. There's a preview that came out this week of it. But the news story is that 79 recommendations came out of that report. Well, if there's 79 things that you need to do to make sure it doesn't happen again, it sounds like there was nothing that worked.
Yeah.
And when you consider the amount of people who, you know, uniformed service, civil service, who are serving in the military at bases in the U.S., bases, you know, worldwide, 79 things need to get fixed.
Yeah.
It's either over-bureaucratic, their findings, you know, the hallmark of DOD, or it really needed 79 things. That meant there was nothing in place.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things that they talk about, that the top things that are getting reported that Gates is putting into place right now, were things that we knew at the time that had come out like a week or two after the Fort Hood tragedy, and that was that the FBI had spot-on'd him.
Mm-hmm.
And that they knew they had him talking to extremists.
Mm-hmm.
Al-Qaeda extremists, and they knew it. And what the panel found was that there was no connection in sharing information between the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force, which is worldwide, operates nationwide in every state, and DOD. Well, that's absurd.
Yeah. Jonathan, information sharing in the federal government is a problem.
Yeah, it's the same issue repeating itself, connecting the dots and communicating one to another.
And the second finding, there was no information sharing with the Joint Terrorism Task Force that had already identified the guy. The second one was that there's no system in place for people to report inside DOD that you think somebody is acting in an extreme or fundamentalist kind of way that would threaten national security. There was no reporting system. So putting in place some sort of electronic reporting system, which you can bet DOD will find a contractor that says it cost $1 billion.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And it'll be very complicated. It'll fail the first time, right? It'll fail the first time, and it'll be just this complicated system as opposed to an email address.
Yeah.
Where somebody just collects the information and sends it back out to the Joint Terrorism Task Force in the field.
For analysis, yeah.
Easy fix, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's very disturbing that it's very disturbing that there were 79 recommendations. When you look at the 9/11 Commission's findings, it didn't even cross, I think, a dozen or two. And that was government-wide look at 9/11. That was an entire government-wide. Here's one agency, DOD, and they're saying, like, everything went wrong and nothing was in place.
This reminds me of 9/11 a lot because it's, we never thought of this stuff before. And unfortunately, it doesn't reflect well on an agency whose big gig is supposed to be contingency planning.
And taking action when it's needed.
Yeah, anticipating potential threats.
Well, that I'm not sure everybody in America would agree that they do that or have done it well, but they're certainly been very effective at offensive. This is sort of the defensive, like how can we figure out and defend against something that might be going wrong in the ranks?
Yeah.
And one of the findings that they did report this week, which Gates adopted, was that the personnel policies that were in place for determining whether someone in the ranks was engaging in extremist or supremacist behavior in the ranks, that the policy about assessing that behavior was very unclear. What constituted supremacist behavior in the ranks?
Mm-hmm.
What constituted extremist behavior? And you have to balance that against people's right to practice their own religion. And I think DOD shied away from it, and it backfired.
Here's what bothers me about this story. It's another example, this information sharing piece of this, Jonathan. It's another example, as you said, here we go again with the information sharing. At what point, we just played the management agenda thing that you conducted at IRMCO, where they talked about these kinds of things. How do we break out of silos? How do we all this stuff that we have talked about ad infinitum over and over and over again.
Huge,
what does it take? Is it a managerial shortcoming? Because we certainly have access to the technology. We have as much money as we want. When I say we, I'm referring to people in the government, not myself, of course. But they have access to as much money as they need to make it happen. They certainly have the latitude to try and fail and try again. So why?
A lot of it's cultural, and of course there's an enormous trust in other federal civil servants that's sort of built in. And I would suggest there's some contradictory policies out there. You've got the don't ask, don't tell policy at the same time, which again tells people that certain things aren't their business,
right.
or something
you shouldn't,
talk about it.
Right. Well, that's the third rail about people having their own national, their own identity of their own national origin, their own religious identity, their own sexual identity, in the forces, in the troops, in the civilian forces, and still being able to come to work every day. And the balancing of, I can practice my religion. My parents are from, I come from that country, but I'm a U.S. citizen now. Balancing those identity issues with what's extremist behavior, what's supremacist behavior. They stayed away from it. They sort of shied away from it as, culturally. But the guy was doing a whole lot more than just practicing his religion. People reported being freaked out by him. And one of the findings was that the actual commanders and supervisors over him had no idea they had gotten past a problem. As Jonathan said, that is the culture of the federal workforce. It's always been the culture for the last 20 years I've been practicing law, even for just your average disgruntled employee who isn't planning on blowing up a building or taking down lives, they pass that person along without letting the next place know this person has a chip on their shoulder. This person's a problem.
We got to wrap this segment up, but Jonathan, is there a solution here, or is this another one of these reports that's going to get filed? Obviously, Secretary Gates has already directed these 26 interim recommendations to be implemented. But once they're implemented, I mean, if there's anything that we've learned from the cybersecurity fight, it's that somebody who's a bad apple is going to figure out a way to get around whatever's in place at any given time.
Oh, I think it takes some personnel actions. When I was here the last time, we talked about the Joint Fighter program and how the two-star was sacked and replaced.
Yep.
Again, there's got to be some accountability here, and if people do not see some consequence, they're not going to change their behavior.
All right. Your story number two is what we will cover next when we come back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown for Friday, April 16th, and we will be back in a moment.
NBC News Radio. I'm Marlis Majerus. Travel chaos continues as ash from an erupting volcano in Iceland disrupts thousands of flights. NBC's Al Roker is in Iceland.
Airport shut down in France, Germany, the UK, Denmark, Norway, Finland, Belgium, Poland, even air travel as far away as China.
The government is accusing Wall Street powerhouse Goldman Sachs of defrauding investors during the housing meltdown. The Securities and Exchange Commission claims the investment company sold subprime mortgages designed to fail and then placed bets against them. At the White House, President Obama issued a directive he says will make it easier for hospital patients, particularly gays and lesbians, to receive visitors and choose who will make medical decisions on their behalf. He also signed a bill from Congress extending long-term jobless benefits through January 2nd. I'm Marlis Majerus, NBC News Radio.
Right now, the Home Depot has a Ryobi One Plus starter kit for just $99. $170 value. You get an 18-volt cordless drill, circular saw, two rechargeable batteries, a one-hour charger, and a bag to keep it all in. Holes will be drilled and boards will be cut with Ryobi One Plus starter kit for just $99. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. U.S. only. See store for details.
Hurry, get to the JCPenney lowest prices of the season sale. For JCP rewards members only, you'll earn a $10 reward certificate for every $50 you spend. There's no limit to the number of reward certificates you earn. Don't miss doorbusters Friday 3 p.m. to close and Saturday 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Like $4.99 Junior's Tops, 60% off St. John's Bay Polos for him. Classic towels, just $2.99. Go to jcp.com to see everything on sale. New look, new day, who knew? JCPenney. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Offers end April 17th.
Checking your daily TSP ticker. The latest numbers from April 15th, 2010. The G fund is unchanged at $13.24. The F fund is up 0.02 at $13.62. The C fund rises 0.01 at $14.44. The S fund gains 0.02 at $19.15. And the I fund picks up 0.08 at $19.33. Your L funds rise or stand still. The 2040 up 0.03 at $16.85. The 2030 moves up 0.02 at $16.52. The 2020 also up 0.02 at $16.19. The 2010 stays at $15.64. The L income is unchanged at $14.24. Check your rates anytime, every day on federalnewsradio.com. Dimitri Sotis, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Save money at HalfPriceDC.com with half-price gift certificates to the area's best restaurants, stores, spas, and more. This week, HalfPriceDC.com has half-price gift certificates to La Bergerie in Old Town Alexandria, providing award-winning French cuisine for over 30 years, Salon Jean and Day Spa in Cabin John, a state-of-the-art salon and spa, and Discovery Galleries in Bethesda, a premier art gallery providing custom framing solutions. See all the offers at HalfPriceDC.com.
Are you in the cloud? Whether you're managing your software on-premise, in the cloud, or a bit of both, Microsoft offers you unprecedented choice. The choice to manage the mission-critical computing resources your agency needs now with the vision, flexibility, and security features to meet many of the ever-evolving federal requirements. Cloud services from Microsoft. We're all in. Are you in?
Learn more about Microsoft's cloud services. Visit Microsoft.com/govcloud. That's Microsoft.com/govcloud.
Federal IT and security managers increasingly must rely on integrated tools and techniques designed to minimize damage and protect their most valuable information assets with dynamic defense architectures. This environment requires routine decision-making to balance introduction of new technology with ongoing mandates for information assurance. Register today for the Integrated Threat Detection and Defense webinar, April 28th at 2 p.m., and plan to join this detailed overview of several traditional protection and computing strategies presented by seasoned security experts who will help you update your thinking about content security and data privacy, malware detection and prevention attack, and intrusion prevention. Go to digitalgovernment.com/events/webinars and select Identity Threat and Detection Defense. That's digitalgovernment.com/events/webinars and select Identity Threat and Detection Defense to learn more and to register today. Presented by Cisco.
You wouldn't drive your kids in the car without them wearing their seatbelts. So why would you leave them unprotected once you're gone? At Zelle Law, we help protect your assets for your heirs and provide the latest techniques designed to maximize your wealth. To learn more, call 571-203-9355 or visit us on the web at zelllaw.com. You can also join me, Wayne Zell, every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Blueprint for Wealth right here on Federal News Radio.
Be sure to mark May 23rd through 25th on your calendar and attend the American Council for Technology's Management of Change Conference at the Lowe's Philadelphia Hotel in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. For three decades, MOC has served as a catalyst for collaboration across the government IT community. Attend this conference and hear experts address the government IT strategic agenda and share their strategies, tools, and best practices that lead to success through collaboration. For more information, go to actgov.org/MOC2010. Register today.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown, and my expert panel this week consists of Deborah Roth of Shaw, Bransford & Roth, partner in the law firm there, and also one of the co-hosts of Fed Talk every Friday morning at 11 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and Jonathan Brule, the executive director of the IBM Center for the Business of Government. And Jonathan, your story number two this week is from GovExec. The headline is, "Legislation Aims to Improve Presidential Transitions." I know this is near and dear to your heart. I have to confess, I was a little surprised that this wasn't your number one, but it is an important story. And what I thought was interesting about this was the whole conversation that took place in December, January, February, March of last year about how remarkably smooth people thought this transition went compared to others in the past. And yet there are still some things that some people think could be done to make them better.
Yeah, indeed. I think I could be accused of sort of looking at inside baseball here. This is a little out of the main view, but you're absolutely right. The last transition went spectacularly well, very smooth. I had a neat little opportunity to sit in on some of the meetings because the president asked Chief of Staff Josh Bolton to run the transition from the inside, and he asked that it be the smoothest transition in history and that all agencies cooperate. And on the candidate side, on President Obama-elect's side, John Podesta chaired the effort as well. And indeed, that effort had begun quietly ahead of time as well. And the important lesson is that it worked magnificently. When the team sat down in those sessions, they talked politely, professionally, and in a snappy, orderly fashion about every issue. They went through national security, homeland security, economic policy issues. They wanted to make sure that everyone understood what was being teed up and what were big issues and what were not, where there were little glitches in terms of pre-clearance of people. It was fascinating to watch, and it was far more productive and smooth than you could imagine. But the surprise on it is that it doesn't ordinarily happen this way.
Mm-hmm.
The usual worry is that any candidate showing the least bit of preparation for taking office is accused of measuring the drapes in the White House and already, getting jealous about office space and location and so forth, when in fact the preparation takes an awful lot of time and requires lots of coordination.
Well, if I recall correctly, there was a story in the summer of 2008 that we covered on this station, and I believe, and I apologize if I'm wrong, but I believe it was at the time Senator Clinton had chosen kind of quietly the person that she was going to be her transition leader, and Senator Obama and Senator McCain in particular, who at that time had shaped up to be the Republican nominee, gave her no end of grief about measuring the drapes, as you said. And every person that we talked to from inside government, we had you on to talk about this issue, Jonathan. We talked to the folks from the Partnership for Public Service.
Exactly.
And they all said, this is the best thing that somebody could be doing. And not only is it good that she's doing it, they all should do it. And if they're smart, they already have and just haven't, nobody's found out about it yet.
I'm told that not too long afterwards, when the field narrowed to two candidates, that the representatives from each campaign met with one another and decided in sort of a peace treaty to lay off one another on that issue, with an understanding that regardless who won, the nation needed a team ready to take office and govern immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the big story here is we were well served. Mm-hmm. There's a marvelous story by Martha Kumar from Towson University about a threat that was seen on the morning of inauguration.
Mm-hmm.
And the teams were prepared. They had done tabletop exercises. They had all met and dealt with one another. And so the ability of the government to function, to anticipate and respond to that, well, it was executed smoothly. And fortunately, nothing happened.
Yeah.
But the point is things governed well. So the point here is that this legislation would improve this by making it statutorily and abundantly clear. The transition preparation is not to be criticized.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's necessary and needs to begin long ahead of time, and that both the resources and the various organizational arrangements should be in place
mm-hmm.
so that we can have that kind of preparation again the next time.
I'm just thinking, I don't know why it didn't occur to me until now, but I'm thinking about what if we had an attack, not even necessarily in Washington, not even necessarily on the Capitol grounds,
correct.
At 11:45 on January 20th of any year,
right.
of any election.
Who's in charge, you say?
Right. And even if you knew who was in charge, they probably weren't yet confirmed, and you don't want them at that point trying to figure out where the men's room is. You want them to know who to call and what the whole exercise is to respond.
Yeah, you know, and the story, a couple things. I think Clinton was, Senator Clinton at the time was criticized because she wasn't clear yet who was going to be the party nominee. And so it seemed, I guess, a bit, the criticism was seemed a bit arrogant that you had the bird in the hand. But also, you know, it's this idea of to the victor goes the spoils. And it's sort of not genuinely in our politics. It's been like not generally to recognize you were going to get the spoils of your victory.
Because so much of our political system is
so
still genuinely.
Right. But, you know, to me, I think that it's always about like this great catastrophe that'll occur on transition day. The reality was that unlike some recent past administrations, the ability to get on top of the current issues facing the government
mm-hmm.
on day two was enormous. It was like night and day. People, particularly the 9/11 Commission, which I can't believe I'm mentioning twice in one show, they criticized the Bush administration in his first, in W's first administration, that he had a good acquainted period with the job
mm-hmm.
For many months, and the threat build to 9/11, because he was in get acquainted.
Right.
They did get acquainted with the issues, the Obama administration. They were doing it November, December, and January. So on day two of his administration, he didn't need to get acquainted.
Yeah.
He was deep in.
Yeah.
So it's less to me about the catastrophe that could occur on transition day. It's more about you have a job to do, and on day two, you know, you're supposed to do it.
All right. There's a lot to this story, and you can find it on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The headline is Legislation Aims to Improve Presidential Transitions. It's from GovExec, and it's Jonathan Brule's number two story of the week on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We're ready to go to the top of the chart this week with Jonathan Brule's story number one and Deborah Roth's story number one. We'll give you those when we come back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Hey ladies, it's time to break up with the bottle. I'm talking about your sticky, messy bottled foundation, because there's a makeup that will treat you much better. Bare Minerals by Bare Essentials. And right now, you can try it risk-free. Just call 1-800-900-6737 in the next 15 minutes to find out how. Bare Minerals is naturally radiant and good for your skin. See, unlike other makeup, Bare Minerals offers complete coverage without fillers, oil, fragrance, or other irritants. It's so pure, you can actually sleep in it. Try it risk-free and see for yourself why Bare Minerals was quoted in Glamour magazine as a magic eraser and life-altering. We understand any breakup is hard. That's why we're going to make it easier to walk away from your old foundation. Call now to try Bare Minerals risk-free, and we'll also send you a free gift set. This is a radio-only opportunity you don't want to miss. So call 1-800-900-6737 in the next 15 minutes. Hurry, supplies are limited. 1-800-900-6737.
Newsmakers on the Daily Debrief with Chris Dorabeck and Amy Morris.
Earl Devaney, he's the chairman of the Transparency, Accountability, and Recovery Board.
Embarrassment drives self-correcting behavior. I mean, we fixed it. The recipients are being more careful in what they put in. I'm assuming that agencies are doing a better job at policing the data than they did before. So, you know, it is painful, but it has a positive effect. As we have these reporting quarters unfold, we're going to get better and better, and the data is going to get better.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/daily debrief. Federal News Radio in a Web 2.0 world. Find Federal News Radio on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio group on Facebook. Chat with our team and make connections with others in the federal arena. Email us at fnrcomment@federalnewsradio.com. Visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. We count down the top three news stories of the week, every Friday at 2, as chosen by experts in the world of the federal government. This week, I have Jonathan Bruhl, the IBM Center for the Business of Government, and Deborah Roth of Shaw, Bransford & Roth in studio with me, and we're up to
number one.
The top story of the week, according to Deborah Roth, is from the Fed Agent newsletter, and the headline is Training Certification Problems Persist at Federal Protective Services, a GAO report shows. Now, your bias is showing a little bit in this one, Debbie, because the Fed Agent newsletter at fedagent.com is
it's my law firm's
published by your law
that's
firm.
That's right, published by my law firm, but it was GovExec's news story,
ah,
too.
Ah, okay, so you linked up to GovExec, fair enough.
Yeah, and it's a big news story. It's in multiple news sources. We did happen to report it.
Now, before we get too far along, give a plug to the Fed Agent newsletter because I get it every week and I love it, and I want people to be subscribed
to
it.
Thank you. It's one of our two weekly e-reports. We do Fed Manager, Fed Agent. They're free subscriptions. You can just go to their websites, fedagent.com, fedmanager.com. Fed Agent is for law enforcement and national and homeland security folks in the government just to get the weekly sort of top news stories.
Okay.
GAO came out with a scathing report on FPS. Here's why it's my number one news story. Because for what I do for a living, you know, my law firm serves federal employees. I thought my number one and number two story were sort of linked, and that is the ability of the government to make it a safe place where feds go to work.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you know, my top news story is April 15th was tax day. We all paid our taxes.
Right.
We gave the government money. They spent more than we gave them.
That was my top news story this year.
but second to that, the statement of our democracy, we gave them more than they spent, was that actually – going to work as a federal employee ain't so safe.
Potentially dangerous.
It's not so safe. If you've ever been in a federal building, particularly in the Washington, D.C. area, this is no surprise. They're on their cell phones.
Yep.
They're schmoozing coworkers. They're on the internet. They're doing everything but figuring out who's coming in the building and what they got. So they got a failing grade. The contractor guard force got a failing grade. There's 15,000 contractor guards in 2,300 federal buildings. There's 9,000 federal facilities that require protection. And FPS has about 1,200 feds on board who are supposed to manage these guard services. It has been, you know, the struggle of years that they can't get it right. And so there's a call to federalize it. It reminds me in December 2001 when TSA stood up. But on 9/11, I think everybody who did anything in this town, when it happened, we'd all been through airports.
Mm-hmm.
We all said, they should federalize what goes on in the airports.
Yeah, a lot of people did. Not everybody, but a lot of people.
A lot of people said, federalize airport security. And so, you know, there's a call for it. Former IG of Department of Homeland Security is saying that he thinks it's an inherently governmental function, the security of federal facilities. Make them all feds, and then your infrastructure's there for accountability. So they got fake guns. They got fake bombs. They got real knives. They got people in. It was just a debacle.
Mm-hmm.
And all those, and even though FPS was aware of many of these failures, they kept certifying them and renewed their contracts.
This is the same thing when she said inherently governmental. This is something you've paid a lot of attention to, Jonathan.
That definition's up for grabs now.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was going to bring in. Is here's another thing on the list.
Huge, right?
And there's already 80,000 things on this list. Is it or is it not inherently governmental? And just my initial reaction is, it's hard to say that keeping your employees safe is not inherently the responsibility of the employer. And yet, if we had an issue here, I doubt that the company that I work for or the building, the management company that owns this building would hire their own person. They would hire a security firm to do it. So I guess the definition of inherently governmental is one thing, and then the definition of how you execute the things that you think are is a whole other thing.
Well, you could make it a more governmental function and yet not every security guard needs to be a Fed. You could put a federal manager on site at every place where there's a guard station.
Yeah.
I mean, so you have 4 or 6 guards, there's one Fed there. I mean, it doesn't have to be an all or nothing formula, but the debate between contracting out and not contracting out in our government has always been an all or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't necessarily have to be all or nothing, but what the report found was that the resources just aren't there for FPS to know at 2,300 facilities, with 15,000 guards, are they getting the job done?
We only have a minute left. Are we going to see a middle ground, do you think, in this inherently governmental discussion, Jonathan?
Oh, absolutely. And there's a lot of practical matters that get in the way on this. So they're going to have to split the baby in some cases. You talk about this building and an employee matter. We've got the Secret Service guarding the White House and the principals who are constitutional officers.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly there's a recognition that at some point for some officials and some locations that's absolutely essential.
I was just going to say that.
Capitol Police.
I would love to see a test like this done on the Capitol Police because
– Well, they pass. They've done them.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, the Capitol Police and the Secret – I mean, these guys pass. And that's the difference between the TSA – when they did the TSA inspections, initially they had failures when they federalized the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
Then they sort of, rooted out the problems in their staff. And now you have a force that rarely fails any kind of test.
All right, we got to get out because I want to spend some time on Jonathan Brule's story number one on the Federal News Countdown this week. That's Deborah Roth's story, training and certification problems at FPS, the Federal Protective Service. And we will come back to give you story number one from Jonathan Brule on Federal News Radio 1500 AM's Federal News Countdown in a moment.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
Culminating a decade-long journey to expand the periodic table, an international team of scientists from Russia and the U.S., including 2 Department of Energy national labs and 2 universities, has discovered the newest super-heavy element, element 117. The experiment produced 6 atoms of the element. Element 117 was the only missing element in row 7 of the periodic table. Physicists say the discovery of new elements expand our understanding of the universe and provide important tests of nuclear theories. Lawrence Livermore National Lab Director George Miller calls it a significant breakthrough for science that will provide new insight into the makeup of the universe. He calls it a testimony to the strength of science and technology at the partner institutions. Since 1940, 26 new elements beyond uranium have been added to the periodic table.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
It's the Lynn Johnson Show. Motivation, talking motivation. Lynn Johnson Show.
Hi, this is Coach Lynn. Do we push addiction in our society? Do we have an addictive personality? Tune in and find out this Saturday from 11 to noon right here, Federal News Radio, 1500 and 820 AM. Prosper.
Plane's fuel. Are we good to go?
Yeah, I think we're good.
Baggage?
Empty crate? A plane ready for takeoff.
Guys, we got an empty dog carrier here.
And your moment of truth.
We need all eyes on a missing dog now.
Which Push-to-Talk network do you want to keep business flying?
Nothing at ticketing.
Nothing at the gate.
Got a 20 on your missing passenger.
Let me guess. Food court.
Roger that.
When you want the largest push-to-talk coverage area in the nation, you want Verizon. Plus, now get push-to-talk in the BlackBerry Tour smartphone. Buy one today for $99.99 after $100 mail-in rebate debit card and get the second one free. Each phone requires new 2-year activation on a voice plan with data pack $29.99 or higher. Early termination and other fees per line apply. Coverage details at VerizonWireless.com.
For those dedicated to public service, meeting the growing expectations of the American people represents a challenge, but with Smart Project, People, and Performance Management, we can make the government more efficient. Hosts the Performance Institute, Federal News Radio, Federal Managers Association, GovLoop, IBM, and Young Government Leaders present the 11th Annual Government Performance Summit, May 10th through 12th at the Crystal City Hilton. Learn how leadership, measurement, and a motivated workforce drive results. Register today at governmentperformance.org.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and I have to apologize to you, Jonathan. I am maybe the world's worst manager of time, and I just went on and on and on throughout the course of the show, and we have your story number one, the most important story of the week that you chose from GovExec headline, Lawmakers Propose Acquisition Overhaul of Defense, and I've left you about 2 minutes to talk about it, and I'm really sorry.
That's fine. What struck me about this is one more example where the Defense Department is actually stepping out to face some recommendations. In this case, the Congress and the House Armed Services Committee's panel on defense acquisition reform is pushing through a bill that's going to get consideration in the Senate as well. And it's titled and written up by the article I cited is Acquisition Overhaul.
Mm-hmm.
But a close examination of the work that went behind it, and it's very thoughtfully researched. There's a lot of evidence and root cause analysis here. They're taking on a bunch of problems, and they see them as interconnected. It's procurement reform. It's the workforce. They're actually tying in financial management and getting clean audited opinions and getting the books together at DOD, all around the question of performance. And they're looking at metrics. They're looking at process and making performance improvements in each case. And so what's striking to me is the breadth of this,
mm-hmm.
That it's across all these functions, and importantly, it's on all the money that the Defense Department is spending on services and technology, and that's a huge buy for that department. And the estimated savings over 5 years is going to be $135 billion. So that's pretty real.
Scale of 1 to 10, 1 being abject failure, 10 being absolute wonderful success. How would you grade it? If this goes through, if this overhaul is pursued and implemented, what's your grade?
On chances for passage or chances to make the changes?
No, chances that it will be successful if these changes are made.
Longer term, I think, for sure. I mean, they're starting to make some structural changes over there. You've got chief management officers with the deputy and the DCMO with Beth McGrath. I'm seeing some improvement and some accountability with the secretary that's serious, whether it's, again, sacking two stars who fail on a procurement program or similar exercise there. This secretary and the department seem to be getting serious about management issues, and maybe it's the pending budget pressure that's going to bring some real attention.
Excellent conversation as always. Thank you, Deborah Roth
Thank
of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Thank you, Jonathan Brewer of the IBM Center for the Business of Government. The story's posted up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and we will be back on Monday with a brand new in-depth program for you, and you will hear the Daily Debrief with Chris Dorbeck and Amy Morris next on Federal News Radio. Radio 1500 AM.